God, window to God, divine source, mother, love, symbol, source of mysticism, mystery, truth, enigma, muse, beauty, law, science, universe, infinity. As we discovered during our meditation, these are the ways in which some of our UU and UU ancestors have described their relationship with nature. Their relationship to nature ranges from the theist to the mystical to the poetic to the scientific. For each of them, nature is a higher power in some manner, even amid their theological diversity. What is nature for you? A big blue marble of astronomical wonder, a source of divinity, a moral and social justice passion, a goddess, a creative and spiritual inspiration, or even a means of thinking about our seventh principle and the interdependent web of life. Could be that your spiritual relationship to nature is something you're still figuring out, or nature may not be a big part of your spiritual life at the moment. But whether or not I've named your relationship with nature or it's something that's still emerging, nature is something that can have a place across the theological spectrum. UU congregations sometimes struggle with their theological diversity, and rather than zeroing in on those places where we don't agree, and the theist non-theist divide certainly comes first to mind for me, rather than zeroing in on that, perhaps we would be better off celebrating those things that we share in common. And nature is a theological, spiritual, artistic, scientific, and environmental point of connection for us, a place where the theist and the non-theist, the mystics and the poets, the humanists and ecologists can all agree that there is something worth adoring about nature, that there is something special in our relationship with nature, that nature is worth honoring, it's worth respecting, it's worth saving. So wherever you may be theologically and whatever your relationship with nature may be, nature can potentially be a place where we can come together and agree that nature is something special, even as we each do so in our own way. My wife Leanne and I began referring to nature as our higher power several years ago as we both came to identify ourselves as religious humanists and non-theist pagans. We go out of our way to be green as much as we can. We have attended, written, and hosted many pagan rituals across the seasonal calendar. We rent a condo across from Hayes Arboretum in Richmond, even though the rent's a little bit higher than elsewhere in Richmond, so that we can have a view of a forest right out our front window. Also means we have no excuse to get some exercise and walk regularly in nature because it's right out our front door. Some of those walks in nature have been particularly magical. One that came to mind as I was writing the sermon was as we were walking on the top of a ravine, and we were coming around a bend. And as we did so, there was a lot of ground cover. As we did so, we surprised a buck who was on the trail munching on some of the ground cover. I was probably, you know, no further from him than I am to you. Now, I didn't really enjoy startling him, but I did enjoy getting to be that close to a buck as it bolted away. So that's, you know, one particular instance that comes to mind, but every time we go, it's magical to us, being under the canopy of the trees, listening to birds, insect, and the wind. Oftentimes, if it's a sunny day, it looks something like that, right, with rays of light coming through in almost a magical way. So calling nature our higher power is something we've grown comfortable with, and it accurately describes the awe, the mystery, the reverence that we feel for nature and her creatures, even though we don't do so in a supernatural way. Now, the term higher power has been popularized by Alcoholics Anonymous and other 12-step programs. So you may associate the term higher power with God, and that's because most people in 12-step programs, just like most people in our country, are Christian, right? So for most people, higher power means God. But for people in 12-step programs and elsewhere, higher power need not mean that, right? So there are plenty of people in 12-step programs and elsewhere that think of higher power as love or service or music, art, science, nature, the universe, humanity, right? So higher power can mean anything that gives you a sense of wonder, a sense of awe, a sense of purpose, of something greater than yourself, right? So my choice of the term higher power was purposeful, right? Because it accurately described my personal relationship with nature. But more than that, I chose it because it's a concept that can hold multiple theological viewpoints at once. So whatever your relationship to nature may be, I think it can fit within the idea of a higher power. One of our Unitarian ancestors who expressed a love for nature as a higher power was writer, poet, and philosopher Ralph Waldo Emerson. He did so from a theist perspective. For him, religion could be found at the intersection of three things: of nature, of our spirits, and of words. So for Emerson, our spirits all come from a common, he called it an oversoul. Right, so he saw that as the spirit of the universe, the spirit of nature. And he wrote, quote, "Man is conscious of a universal soul within or behind his individual life, wherein, as an affirmament, the natures of justice, truth, love, freedom arise and shine." This universal soul he calls reason. It is not mine or thine or his, but we are its. We are its property and men. And the blue sky in which the private earth is buried, the sky with its eternal calm and full of everlasting orbs, is the type of reason. That which intellectually considered we call reason, considered in relationship to nature we call spirit. Spirit is the creator. Spirit hath life itself. End quote. So what Emerson is saying is, as our spirits use their own reason, their spiritual reason, and engage nature, symbols intuitively come to us, and we then attach words to those symbols, which is where language comes from. So as we search and we strive to gain knowledge of nature, that's religion, that's spirituality. And that knowledge then puts us in touch, Emerson says, with the ideal, with a capital I, the spirit of nature, with the divine. And ultimately it puts us in touch with ourselves and with others as well, because we all come from that common oversoul. So theologically, Emerson was certainly a theist, but we could also call him a pantheist, because a pantheist makes no distinction between nature and the divine. They're one and the same. To a pantheist, theism is all, and all is theism. So God is not an anthropomorphic being out there somewhere, transcendent, but in the universe. So Emerson was a nature adorer and a theist, right? Seeing these two things as identical. Loving nature was to love the divine. To love the divine was to love nature. The author of our reading, Aldo Leopold, was not Unitarian or Universalist or UU, but he is the ecological ancestor of all. He was a professor at the University of Wisconsin in the first half of the 20th century, and he's best known for his book, Sand County Almanac, published in 1949. And the reading that Bill read earlier came from that book. Leopold's writings had a huge impact on how our culture views land and wilderness and wildlife. He called for a redesign of our relationship to nature and land. And he stated that extending ethics to our relationships with nature was, quote, an evolutionary possibility and an ecological necessity. His turning point came when he was working for the Forest Service happily shooting wolves and mountain lions, as he was told to do, because they were pests that destroyed the economic resources we cared about, livestock and deer. But on one particular day, and Bill shared this in the reading, one particular day, after he had shot a wolf, he looked in her eyes and saw what he described as a green fire dying. And he had an epiphany about nature and how humans had made many, many mistaken understandings of nature and of animals and our relationship with them. So instead of dominating nature and ridding it of those things that seemed less useful from a human-centered point of view, Leopold asserted that all elements of an ecosystem are necessary, and they're valuable, and they're all interdependent. So all species, predator or prey, plant, insect, mammal, whether useful to humans or not, they all contribute to a healthy ecosystem, as our video story for today demonstrated quite well. So the well-being of a species depended on the health of the whole ecosystem, just as a whole ecosystem depended on the health of each species. Leopold was influenced by Emerson and others in seeing nature as alive and worthy of respect on its own terms. He articulated a spiritual relationship with nature that borrowed Emerson's emphasis on intuition. He wrote, "Possibly in our intuitive perceptions, which may be truer than our science and less impeded by words than our philosophies, we realize the indivisibility of the earth. Its soil, mountains, rivers, forests, climate, plants and animals, and respect it collectively not only as a useful servant, but as a living being. Vastly less alive than ourselves in degree, but vastly greater than ourselves in time and space. A being that was old when the morning stars sang together, and when the last of us has been gathered unto his fathers, will still be young." Leopold invited us to think like a mountain, to think beyond our short-term, human-centered economic self-interests, and instead think about the long-term ecological interests of our planet and the life that shares the planet with us. Now, what he said was not some spiritual mumbo-jumbo from a tree hugger, as environmentalists are often derogatorily called. What he spoke was both a spiritual and scientific truth. And that scientific truth was demonstrated for us in our video for us today, that wolves can change rivers. At the time Leopold was alive, the terms religious humanists or religious naturalists were not in currency, but based on what he wrote and what his family said about him, that would be an accurate way to describe his theology. For him, nature was a source of awe and wonder and beauty, and he saw it as a colossal life form greater than any other. But his adoration and admiration of nature did not move toward supernatural explanations and theism or pantheism. He remained a non-theist, even as he loved nature in spiritual and ecological terms. So Emerson, on the one hand, a poet and a pantheist, and Leopold, on the other, an ecologist and religious humanist, both viewed nature as a higher power, but in their own way. Reverence for the earth, environmental passion, and concern for the interdependent web of life of which we are part is for theists, it is for non-theists, and it's for everyone in between. May we all think like a mountain for nature's sake. So as we return to our lives this week, I encourage us all to consider our spiritual and ecological relationships with nature. How might we think like a mountain with a deep and broad sweeping view of ecology and nature? How can we treat nature as a higher power, regardless of our own theology? How might we change how we live to reduce our ecological footprints how can we impact those cultural narratives that see land and animals as mere resources? What can we do to honor nature and this belated Earth Day? Like the wolves in Yellowstone, we each affect how the river flows, and nature is waiting for us.